Hello and welcome to Towel Capes. I'm Cody Nestor. He's Todd Heal.
Hey, guys.
And today we're continuing our discussion of the 2002 comic book Hush. Published by DC, written by Jeff Loeb, with art by Jim Lee, Scott Williams, and Alex Sinclair. Today we're discussing Batman issues 614 through 616. But before we begin, a quick recap, and of course, spoilers are ahead. So Todd, we know Batman, he's being sabotaged from afar by a mysterious figure known only as Hush.
Right.
He's kind of turning his life upside down and kind of puppeting some of Gotham's most iconic villains against him. We've seen Poison Ivy, we've seen Killer Croc, we've seen the Joker at the end of our last issue. We also have Catwoman, who's now kind of villain turn friend confidant to Batman and
yes.
love interest to Batman
well.
We've also introduced Batman's childhood friend, his heretofore unheard of childhood friend, Dr. Thomas Elliott, who was called in once Batman was actually he took a fall into Crime Alley after someone, presumably Hush, presumably someone else, cut his bat rope, leaving him falling and almost dying in Crime Alley from a fractured skull. Thomas Elliott was called in to kind of perform surgery and save Bruce's life as well. We've seen a lot of backstory and setup to their friendship. In our last few issues in 612, Batman jetted off to Metropolis, met Catwoman there, hot on the trail of Poison Ivy. They were looking for her in connection with what's going on here. She had stole a bunch of money, went on the lam, and they come up against none other than Poison Ivy controlled Man of Steel.
Epic battle.
So yes, after Batman had a little bit of a battle with Superman in 612 and 613, Bruce Wayne, Thomas Elliott, and Selina, and a little interjection from Dr. Leslie Tompkins, they all headed off to the opera. And at the opera, we were introduced also to Harley Quinn, who was our Pagliacci for the night. Really good setup there for issue 613. At the end of 613, basically, we were introduced to a Tommy Elliott lying dead in the alley at the hands of who, Todd?
The Joker.
The Joker. And that's kind of where, after that last kind of full page, that full page spread there, we're kind of starting the story here now in part six, The Joke. So, Todd, bring us into the story here. What's happening in issue 614?
So basically, we just open back up, and Batman's just wailing on the Joker in that alley. He's just been—he's pushed to the brink. He's just—he's kind of reliving all the past things the Jokers have done. The Joker's done some of the heinous stuff.
You
he's
said
done.
Jokers, three Jokers, right?
Not that.
Three
no.
Jokers. That's your headcanon.
One Joker.
Okay, one Joker. Yeah, he's reliving the shooting of Barbara Gordon,
right.
The shooting of Sarah Essen, Jim Gordon's wife, the beating Jason Todd to death with a crowbar, all the heinous shit the Joker's done over the years, while, meanwhile, as you said, just wailing on him.
Yeah, he's just, like I say, he's recapping all that stuff in his mind, and he's just, you know, trying to play out, why is he letting him live this long? Why is he just keep playing this out? You know, he's ready to end him in this alley tonight.
Yeah, exactly. Some of the internal monologue here, some of the writing here is, like, super strong to kind of set up the relationship and the dynamic that Batman has had with the Joker, and how many times he's let him walk away and how many times he's let him live to hurt others and hurt the people he cares about. And at this point, Batman, with everything that's been going on and being set up against him and being kind of twisted in his life, he's kind of come up against the Joker now, and he's just kind of at his breaking point.
Yeah, he's pretty much reached it right here.
As we go through the fight, you know, the Joker keeps saying stop, stop, and you're like, why is he saying stop?
Mm-hmm.
I really like kind of as we get into the fight a little bit more. It's not really a fight; it's a pummeling of the Joker. We see the page borders go from like black to red.
Oh, yeah.
Just kind of representing that rage that Batman is kind of feeling. And he kind of, again, he's saying to himself, he will not accept any responsibility for the Joker for his actions. And he's dead set on tonight being the night that Joker ends.
Oh, yeah.
So pick us up from there, Todd.
So we kind of see at one point Harley Quinn kind of makes her way in behind Batman. She's going to smash him with a mallet and actually winds up smashing the Joker in the arm.
Yeah, right.
Like he ain't been through enough already from this pummeling at the hands of Batman.
Right.
Batman pretty much just kicks her in the gut and knocks her aside. So you can tell he's pretty much had it. He's at the breaking point.
Yeah, and here the Joker is again. He's making his little jokes, but he's telling him he's not joking this time. He's telling him to check his gun, that he didn't kill Tommy, that there's nothing in his gun but blanks. And Batman is just, again, he's not believing anything. He's dead set. It's just another lie. It's just another lie to keep himself kind of, you know, alive and things like that.
Yeah, and at one point, Catwoman she makes her way out into the alley. She's trying to, you know, do her best to stop it. She's still got that gunshot wound she suffered from Harley in the previous issue. Batman kind of takes advantage of it. I think he actually punches her in the gunshot
wound. Yeah, right
wound.
In that gunshot yeah. wound to kind of exploit that. Yeah, which yeah. is, it. I like the she like scratches him across the chest too, and you kind of later a little bit see.
Right.
Kind of like his kind of injuries, like it's like through his armor and his chest hair, and intercutting all this too, we get some of those great kind of
those watercolor paintings.
Yeah,
yes.
we get a lot of that from like you know thinking about Barbara Gordon and how she was Batgirl and she was like this lively, vibrant young girl, and that was taken away from her, and she's now she's just kind of sitting in a chair inside of a belfry all day. Then you kind of see the flashbacks to Jason Todd and how Batman kind of blames himself for like what happened, and then he wasn't ready. He was never as trained and never as prepared as Dick was to take over the role of Robin. So mm-hmm. like you get a lot of good Batman kind of characterization and a lot of like things you know, but just done and seen visually in a way that you hadn't really seen
as
much
before,
of
yeah.
in the Batman lore, I would say.
Yeah, I like the one where he's kind of, you know, set Catwoman to the side, you know, after she tried to intervene, and he's like has a scene how he's holding her in his arms, like, what if it's one night he's killed you?
Yeah, exactly. You know, like that's that he's still kind of at this point kind of internally debating, you know, Catwoman's role in his life. Does he ever tell her, you know, which we'll see kind of in issues coming up, like it's the superhero conundrum, like having people in your life that you care about that know about you or even around you, they're always going to be put in harm's way. And like that, again, that kind of sketch of, you know, Batman kind of holding Catwoman in the alley with like the Joker kind of graffiti on the wall.
Yeah.
Great panel.
And so we kind of see Batman, he's kind of got the Joker down on the ground in the alley, and you see somebody kind of making their way in behind him with a gun. And they take one shot, and it kind of glances off of his glove. Take another one, and it shoots one of the points off of his ear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's revealed that it's former police commissioner James Gordon.
Yeah, and I don't remember what was going on at this point in the comics to like that he was no longer commissioner, or even an active member in the police force. But, you know, he kind of tells Batman, you know, I may no longer carry a badge, but, you know, I've took the oath to kind of protect and serve. And, you know, this man's ruined a lot of lives, and I'm not going to let you throw your life away to end his. And, you know, too, we see that all this time that Batman's kind of this stuff is going on, Jim Gordon shooting at him, Harley's doing all this, like the internal monologue of how he could kill the Joker.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, like I could push his ribs right through his lungs and rupture his heart. I could crush his windpipe and sever all the oxygen from his brain, compound his skull into the pavement until it fractured into so many pieces his brain would spill out.
Oh yeah,
that just reminds me of like that Yellow Bastard in Sin City.
Yeah, it's
just
great
like
stuff.
Keep
yeah.
pummeling until there's nothing left but bits. But yeah, it's fantastic stuff. And then you kind of see that panel where Batman kind of turns around and kind of comes back to his senses a little bit, and you know, internally saying, Jim Gordon, with all he's lost, I thought he'd understand. And
yeah.
he has lost almost more than anybody here. He's lost a wife, his daughter was paralyzed by this man, but he's not willing to let Batman ruin his life just to take the life of the Joker. And I love how in these like kind of three panels we kind of transition from that like rage filled red border into the white border at the bottom until Batman's kind of like reclaimed his senses.
Oh, yeah.
So to speak.
So as we see Batman and Gordon kind of standing in the alley with the Joker still just kind of laying there on the ground, we kind of pan up and we see our bandaged figure, and they pull in to reveal him, and he pulls something out of his pocket and he starts flipping a coin, and it lands on the scarred side.
Yes. So we're now, here's another red herring, Todd. Mm-hmm. So like we've got, and I think this is really the first time you start to kind of see his actual clothing underneath his jacket.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong, but he's got like this kind of like thick kind of sweater on and like this tactical gear on it. And that'll kind of come back and play a little bit later. But now we have a bandaged man flipping a scarred coin on one side. So who does that put you in mind?
Obviously, this Two-Face.
Obviously.
It's got to be Two-Face.
So now you're red herring. We thought all this time that it was Thomas Elliot. Can't be Thomas Elliot anymore. He's lying dead in an alley, presumably at the hands of the Joker, which we'll talk about that a little bit. Now we have a bandaged figure that could very well be Two-Face flipping a coin. So pick us up in our next issue, Todd. Our next part of the story is part 7, I believe, The Dead.
So we open, we're at Thomas Elliot's funeral. Batman's kind of having some flashbacks to kind of when they first met, you know, meeting in school. I think their lockers were together, and Bruce kind of mentions that, you know, not many kids talk to him because of the whole billionaire kid stuff.
And exactly.
Him and Tommy kind of hit it off, you know, right at the start, and he kind of goes into the recital of the, oh, captain, my captain.
At Selena's kind of like, almost like throwing up in her own mouth.
Right.
To hear him recite the, oh, captain, my captain. But yeah, we get some more of those like painterly watercolor panels here, setting up again that they're playing the little game, the little pewter soldier figures that they would play.
Right.
More of that kind of context of Tommy always making sure Bruce was trying to think one step ahead and trying to always kind of beat that into him a little bit, and just some more of their backstory and things like that together. He says, Bruce says that despite spending his adult life mostly in Philadelphia, he left instructions to be laid to rest next to his parents in the Gotham City Cemetery. So we're in Gotham kind of laying Tommy to rest, so to speak.
Yep. So from there we go, we're back in the Batcave, and Bruce is kind of just still working through everything that's happened in the Batcave computer. He's kind of, you know, running the ballistics on what happened to Tommy. I think at one point he says he's been up 56 hours straight.
Yeah, I've been awake for 56 hours. And, like, you know, just some of the design work here, like Batman, you get this, like, futuristic, holographic kind of you know, system that he's using here that, you know, kind of has got like an AI feedback built into it. He's going through and looking at the ballistic report simultaneously, like looking at the cause of death listed for Thomas Elliott. And like just some of the design work here, I think, is some of the stuff that gets overlooked with Jim Lee's art. But it's like all this detail on this panel and this page is like that you could have gotten away with not doing half of it. But that's what makes his artwork and this book in general, I think, stand out for me. And it's the fact that you can visibly see Batman with the scruff. I've always been a fan of Batman with a little scruff
right
there, but yeah, it lends into him being, you know, awake for 56 hours.
So we also see that Nightwing has kind of made his way down into the cave. He's talking to Bruce and he's like, well, you know, at least you caught the bad guy. The Joker's locked up in Arkham. And Batman drops the bombshell. The Joker didn't kill Tommy.
Yeah, so it leaves Nightwing like, what's going on with that?
Right.
And Batman kind of basically lets him know that you know, the ballistics and everything else, like all this stuff is it's left Joker holding a smoking gun, but the Joker himself didn't actually. He wasn't the one that actually kind of left it there. He kind of says, where's the panel here? He kind of talks about it, you know, everything that's been going on that kind of involves the manipulation of Killer Croc, Catwoman, Poison Ivy, and Harley Quinn. It could reach as high as Superman and as low as the Joker. He says it's someone new or someone old trying something new. And basically, Batman is saying he was, with Tommy Ellis' death, he was kind of seen what he was meant to see, not what really happened.
Right.
It was the scene was kind of staged, not really the Joker who did it after all. And kind of he tells Dick, if detective work were easy, everyone would be doing it.
Right.
And Dick is like, was that humor? now I am worried about you.
So while they're talking, the Oracle kind of breaks in and mentions that the Riddler has stolen an armored car with, like, I think $11 million on board.
Yeah, here's another Batman villain. Here's another classic Batman Gotham City rogue introduced here. We're kind of, again, this story is kind of a greatest hits.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, we're getting another villain introduced here in the Riddler. Before we get there, I love the last kind of panel as they kind of figure out which car to take. So, like, kind of spotlighting some of those. I noticed you've got the 90s Batmobile from the Batman animated series. I noticed that one.
Yeah.
You got the 60s Batmobile for sure.
Obviously,
You got the Batman Forever Batmobile.
Yeah, it's right down there.
Does any of these others stand out to you? Is there any that I'm missing?
Let me pull it up a little closer.
I don't see anything. I mean, I see, you know, some of the 1940s design with the battering ram. Some of, like, the classic, you know, I don't know if they're straight lifted out of older issues, but those are the big three that stand out, the Forever, the 60s, and the animated series 90s Batmobile.
Nice little touch, because I always thought, you know, hey, Batman traded him babies in, retired him.
Right, yeah.
Apparently he's got a whole cave full of them.
Yeah, apparently he's got a rotating, like, you know, just collection of them at any time that he can choose from, which is cool. And we see them kind of haul ass out of the Batcave. I love that the lights on the front of the Batmobile actually project a bat onto the road.
Oh, yeah. And there's a nice little callback to the 66 series with the Gotham City 14 miles away sign right
there.
Yes.
Also, going on to when they get onto the bridge, you see the Sheldon Park, and you also see a Pyro.
Yeah.
A Pyro Expressway.
Oh,
so, Jim Aparo again, famed Batman writer. or artist?
Apara was an artist. Artist, yeah.
Artist, okay. Yeah. I couldn't remember if he was artist or writer. So what happens here, Todd?
So as we're heading into town, Nightwing and Batman kind of have a little convo. He's like, you know, hey, I've kind of heard that, you know, maybe you and Catwoman's got a little something going on. I don't know if you'd think that I wouldn't approve, but hey, man, I think since she's kind of paraphrasing, I think since she showed up, it's kind of helped you out. It's lightened the mood. It's kind of, you know, I think you're in a good place. I'm all for it.
Yeah, exactly. He says, you know, that the thing, his every relationship Batman's ever had with a woman in the past has been screwed up because he either was Bruce and never told her he was Batman, or she knows him as Batman and never told her that she was Bruce. And, like, it's a good a setup and a dynamic, and I like the fact that he's just not like, oh, Catwoman, she's a villain. What the fuck are you doing? Like, I like the fact that, like, hey, man, if you're happy, I'm happy, but you need to tell her the truth kind of here. And he starts off the conversation by saying, "It was, you know, I'm sure this is none of my damn business." And that's how Batman ends it. Is you're right. And he's like, "What?" And he's like, "Yeah, it is none of your damn business." And they're on the trail to the Riddler and his Riddlered outfit goons. And I always love the design of when you design villains of like or goons or minions of villains. So like they're just wearing these like black outfits with like Riddler green like question mark insignias on it. Like I don't know. It just always like something that kind of catches my eye when they're like, it can't just be a dude in a jacket.
Right.
It's got to be a dude. It's got to be somebody in like full Riddler garb. He's got to look like Two-Face or Harley, you know?
I like the little Easter egg too, as they turn in down that alley and Oracle kind of breaks in and say, okay, the Riddler's just past the Denny's on Adams. Denny O'Neil, Neil Adams.
Yeah, exactly. Batman and Nightwing, they kind of spring into action. Some good action work, good action paneling as you kind of get Nightwing kind of flipping over Batman as they're kind of rushing down these goons. And, you know, again, we're getting some more characterization, kind of Batman talking about Dick and his past and how he was always kind of meant to kind of take center stage. He was always gifted, and he was always someone that, you know, he didn't come from a world of privilege like Bruce. You know, he was always had to kind of make his way and prepare him. And again, like he said, Dick was born in the center ring, and his transition from Robin to Nightwing kind of like, you know, put that it all into context basically for him. And then we see the Riddler huffing it through the Gotham City sewer with his little bag of money until he kind of comes out the manhole to find Batman standing there waiting for him. And this is some stuff to kind of take note of here. Some of these internal, you know, the narration from Batman.
Right.
He says, I think about Edward Nygma and the life he has had as the Riddler, where once his obsessive need to leave riddles as clues would confound me, everything about him has become routine. I've half expected him to retire by now. Someone has taken the time to infiltrate the lives of Poison Ivy, Killer Croc, Harley Quinn, even the Joker, and yet the Riddler has apparently been ignored. An armored car robbery, even with $11 million in cash, is exactly the sort of crime the Riddler has always taken on. And the Riddler, by his standards, were amateurish. Why was he ignored? Was he somehow undeserving, or knowingly or otherwise, was he himself intended to be the riddle? So just kind of take note here.
Yeah.
Batman's kind of narration about the Riddler kind of being overlooked. Some of that might come back into play a little bit later on in our story, I would say, Todd.
So they've kind of got the Riddler taken down. They've got the money, and Batman's kind of, you know, a little suspicious about, you know, is this tying into something maybe I'm not seeing here? Maybe it's not exactly the Riddler, but something maybe inside the armored car. So he kind of gives it like a kind of a look through the lenses of his cowl, and he finds the remains of ash from the Lazarus Pit.
The Lazarus Pit, yes. And he says, as with everything, the answer lies somewhere in the details. And then we kind of get our last few pages here, kind of a contrasting meeting between Batman and Catwoman, and a meeting between Joker and a man we come to find out is actually Two-Face.
Right.
Not Two-Face any longer. He's actually a plastic surgery reconstructed Harvey Dent.
So we see where the bandages have come into play, how Harvey has got his face somehow fixed, and he's back to his old self.
Yes, but for some reason he's acting as the Joker's attorney to try to get him out of Arkham. And again, he's wrapped up in bandages. He's wearing the Hush trench coat. All signs right now are pointing to Harvey Dent as our villain here in the story. We're contrasting that of Catwoman and Batman kind of at the zoo, and we see through the panels here that he kind of makes the decision to tell Selina. Yeah,
he reveals his secret.
To tell her that he is indeed Bruce Wayne. And he kind of, again, you know, she says that she doesn't want to be the thing that kind of trips him up, you know. And he has a lot of strings, and I just don't want to be one of the strings that trips you up. And he tells her that she won't.
Yeah.
And reveals himself, and they kind of embrace. And she makes a comment about, you know, he needs a shave in the bath. And our last little part is Dick originally told him before, while they were traveling in the Batmobile, that he should have shaved. And he says, Dick was right. I should have shaved. So now, Todd, we're going on to our final part for this episode. Let's talk about part 8, The Assassins. I want to make one little note here. So if you look on the cover of 616 is where we're at here. Another one of those little Jim Lee Easter eggs. If you look into the guard, I guess you would call it, on Roz's sword.
Mm-hmm.
At the bottom it says, Batman is number one.
Hey,
in the guard there. So just a little Easter egg, just one of those little things that Jim Lee likes to slip in here. And here
even
and there.
Ra's al Ghul knew it. He put it on exactly. The handle of his sword.
Yes, exactly. He knew he was good enough for his daughter. So what's happening in 616, Todd?
So we pick up. We're in the skies over Metropolis. We see a jet flying away. We also see Batman showing up in Bat plane, bat wing.
Yeah, I don't know how to. I guess one of those terms would be accurate. I really like it. It's very sharp. It's very sleek. But I really enjoy the design of this. Mm-hmm. We'll call it bat wing. We'll kind of go with that as he kind of tails along with whatever this jet is.
So he's kind of monologuing to himself. You know, all this stuff that's been happening, all this setup, all this recruiting, these certain criminals doing all this stuff. It takes somebody with some time and some money. And he's kind of got his idea, especially now that he's found that Lazarus Pit ash, that it maybe leads back to his old enemy, Ra's al Ghul. So he's going to kind of try to put that to the test. And we find out once he kind of gets on board that airliner that he's kidnapping his daughter, Talia.
Talia, yeah. So he's taking Talia to kind of draw out the demon Ra's al Ghul. Something else I like to point out that I like design-wise here is Batman's kind of stealth kind of infiltration suit.
Oh, yeah.
That he's wearing. Just like, again, some of these designs, when it's like not done for the purposes of like selling toys and stuff.
Can be
pretty cool, exactly. It makes sense. You know, it's probably kind of a little bit, it's probably made to kind of like withstand some pressure and things like that, because, you know, you're kind of going into altitude and things like that. But this kind of like stealth flight infiltration suit that he's wearing while he's like getting aboard this Luthor jet, that he's kind of also remarking he knows the layout of it, because it's basically LexCorp stole the plans from a Wayne Tech jet as well. So you kind of see him infiltrated. He kind of reminiscent of some of the very early pages of 608. He kind of uses his like his cow kind of targeting, kind of taking out the guards on board. And he eventually does find Talia and kind of slashes her her seatbelt and kind of flies out of there. Again, the panel with him like holding her in his arms and kind of flying away with like the bat parachute. I was like, wow. Just like the suit, the design, the way the parachute looks, the kind of like the way the paracord is kind of strapped into like the bat, kind of this like kind of metallic kind of bat logo that's part of the parachute. Like, it's just all like, it's just so detailed and just looks so, so awesome. Like, you just can't beat the.
It's amazing how good some of those suits look if they're not done in garish colors to sell toys.
Yeah, to sell toys or like, you know, make it an ice suit for no reason. Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff. Exactly.
So we kind of cut to the White House. And again, you're having kind of to put yourself in this point in DC Comics. Lex Luthor, as we mentioned before, is president.
Mm-hmm.
I had forgot Pete Ross, I think, is actually his vice president.
Pete Ross. I don't remember Pete Ross.
That was an old Smallville friend of Superman.
Okay. Yeah. So he just made him vice president just because he was friends with Clark
Kent. Thinking it was Pete Ross now. Correct me in the comments, folks, if I'm wrong.
And then we kind of get this, like, he kind of tells Luthor, you know, what went down. And obviously, it's a bat-shaped jet. It was obviously Batman. Do you want to take any action? And Luthor's like, not yet. And I don't remember. We're going back through this, and I'm like reading as we go. I don't think that comes into play into this at all.
I think it must
come into play either in some other story, or it's just kind of left as a hint for maybe something else that was not kind of explored as we went forward.
So from there we go, Bruce has arrived back home in Gotham. He's in the Batcave, and he walks in and sees a sword jammed into one of his consoles. And the first thing he's worried about is, Alfred. What if they've got the Alfred? So he's running through the house frantically looking for Alfred. Of course, Alfred's upstairs just doing his thing.
Right, exactly. Exactly, yeah. A good detail here, again, kind of drawing back on some of the past history. Obviously, Ra's al Ghul is set up at this point. He knows who Batman is. Mm-hmm. He knows who Bruce Wayne is. You know, previously he had you know, Bruce had talked about too a little, I don't think, maybe we haven't even gotten to it, but he talks about in the future about Ra's kind of kidnapping Dick Grayson at one point, holding him so that he could kind of test Bruce and his mettle to see if he was worthy of kind of a bed and towel, pretty much, I guess, worthy of his daughter and her hand in marriage and those kind of things. So, again, kind of pulling back on some of those strings and some of the things that we've kind of set up and all the years and relationships we've had for Batman in the comics.
And I think Bruce kind of deducts that maybe, you know, the whole sword in the console was maybe to try to draw me out to where Ra's is and maybe leave Talia unprotected so he can swoop in and get her.
Exactly. We also kind of see here we have a little bit of a side story with Harvey Dent breaking in on Commissioner Gordon.
Oh, yeah.
And you kind of something that you kind of wonder about if you kind of go into it a little bit deeper is like, how did Gordon know that Batman and Joker and everybody was in the alley outside the opera? You kind of get it here where Harvey Dent is kind of mentioned that he was the one that called Jim Gordon, like, didn't you recognize my voice? He's trying to convince Jim Gordon that he's turned over a new leaf. He's back to being Harvey Dent. It's mentioned that he also had somehow got his law license reinstated. I do not know how.
How would you?
Bullshit.
After you've been two-faced for so many years, how do you get reinstated
no
to practice
way.
Law?
Ain't no way. So you got to suspend some disbelief here that he got his law license back, but ain't no way that's happening. So, but otherwise, Jim's kind of asking what the hell did he want, and he tells him that the gun that killed Tommy Elliott, when it's found, it's going to be traced back to Jim Gordon, that it was his old service pistol, the one he turned in when he retired. He asks him how he would know a thing like that, and he tells him it's all part of a game. Like it or not, we're two pieces, and the question is, how much longer do you want to play?
So I like that. I like that line.
Exactly. We're kind of left with that little string that we're pulling here as we kind of go back to Ra's al Ghul.
So from there, we cut to North Africa, and Ra's just out in the middle of the desert chilling. Batman shows up behind him. They have a little, you know, back and forth. Ra's is trying to tell him, you know, this thing that's happened to you, it's not me. I haven't done this. Why did you take my daughter? And they start to have a little bit of a sword battle.
Yeah, and Ra's is not a very, you know, he's not a big kind of detailed kind of character. He's just kind of a guy.
Right.
But, I mean, I do, again, the design work on Ra's and the way he looks completely fits in.
Oh, yeah.
It's very Batman the Animated Series. This whole thing is very reminiscent of Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah.
Where I think it was like the episode called The Demon, something like that. I can't remember the exact episode of Batman the Animated Series, but it's actually the episode where they do kidnap Dick Grayson and he goes and fights Ra's in the desert, takes his shirt off, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's very reminiscent of that. But yeah, they have their kind of sword fight from here. They're kind of I like that too, that Batman is the first one to make a move. Like, he's just done. He's like over it at this point, and Ra's is kind of remarking about a leopard can change his spots, but maybe it's perhaps more that a snake has shed his skin, and Batman's kind of been this way all along. He's kind of revealing his true self.
So we cut back to Gotham, and we see that Batman has left Talia in the care of Catwoman. You know, she kind of mentioned something about, you know, hey, if you're going to do this thing and you're going to trust me, you really need to trust me. Let me watch her. I'll keep up with her.
Yes.
And everything's going good till Lady Shiva busts you.
Yeah. Yeah, she's been sent there on the behest of Ra's to get his daughter back. So he's kind of tricked Batman, or not tricked, but, you know, persuaded him to kind of come to Africa to kind of fight him to see what's going on. And meanwhile, he's sent Lady Shiva to take down whoever is holding his daughter and take her back and bring him back to her.
So we cut back to their sword battle is still continuing in the desert. Batman just kind of pretty much stabs Ra's right through the center of the chest.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just, it's contrasted. We kind of go back between Lady Shiva versus Catwoman and then Ra's versus Batman. But yeah, Batman ends the fight by just putting the sword right in his gullet.
Yep. Catwoman's kind of getting the worst of that Lady Shiva fight, too. She's getting it handed to her pretty good.
Exactly. We see that when once Batman kind of strikes his kind of his final blow, he tells Ra's that it's over. Now he wants to kind of tell him the information, and he promised he would tell him if Batman beat him. We kind of see some of the rest of the League of Shadows, League of Assassins.
Pop up out of the sand.
Yeah, pop up out of the sand, which is a cool little detail that they're just kind of hiding there and just kind of like able to like kind of pop out on these little platforms that were underneath the sand. And he tells Ra's that, you know, the time it'll take for your assassins to stop him, you can spend time getting medical help or to a Lazarus pit. And what does Ra's reveal to him here, Todd?
So he tells Batman that several months ago, one of his few remaining Lazarus pits was, he says, defiled. And he says, you got to ask yourself, detective, who in your life would wish to come back from the dead?
And Batman immediately says, I must return to Gotham City. We kind of go back to Lady Shiva versus Catwoman. As you said, she's kind of getting her ass kicked. She's not on the level of Lady Shiva.
No.
But fortunately enough for Catwoman, Talia cracks Lady Shiva on the back of the head with a chair, knocks her out, and then ends up taking off. But it is kind of revealed later, once Batman does come back to Gotham, that she, in fact, didn't take off. She actually left for a bit, got some healing herb from Catwoman. She says she's going to be fine. The herbs that she used was going to restore health in her face within a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then she kind of gives him a little smooch.
A little smooch.
Before she heads out the door, because she, you know, he is her beloved. She tells him, I told you recently there was something different about you. Now I know why you came for her, you care for her, maybe even love her. Your mysterious opponent knows this and will use that against you. Is she worth it? And Batman kind of quietly says to himself, yes.
Yes.
And that is our final panel, our final page for Batman 616. So here we go for the next three issues, Todd. We've only got three more issues left here in our story.
Are you serious?
That's, I'm just kidding. That's, yes. Yes, we only got three more issues left from 6, 17, 18, and 19. We'll wrap up the part four of our story and kind of finalize it. So what are your thoughts here on these three issues, Todd?
Solid storytelling, solid issues. I mean, I think all of them, all three are great. You know, it's just you want to unravel this mystery, and you're getting a little bit more. You're getting a thread here, you're getting a thread here, and you think you may know where it's going, but
right.
Do we?
Yes, exactly. We're kind of set up and led to believe, obviously, Tommy Elliott, this person we've never known anything about this, he's created specifically for this story. Obviously, he's Hush, as we mentioned before. Then he ends up getting killed, and we thought at the hands of the Joker. Apparently, the Joker didn't have any involvement. Then we see now Two-Face is kind of taking our top spot as our most likely to be Hush.
Right.
He's in that top of the list right now. And then we kind of see through his conversations with Gordon that he may not even be the one pulling the
strings.
That's
right. He says we're both part of this game.
So maybe leading to believe that maybe someone is pulling his strings as well. So again, once you hit 616, you're really no closer to unraveling the mystery. We obviously know who he is. And if you're listening to this, you may know, you probably do know. You're kind of coming back for this recap retrospective, but you may not know. But there is some seed sown that you should kind of remember and take note of, as we talked about with the Riddler before. He's our next kind of Batman, iconic Batman villain that's kind of been puppeted into this, perhaps.
Yes.
Maybe a little bit unwillingly more than the rest of them. Maybe he doesn't even has no idea. You know, some of the others have kind of they're kind of known that someone's pulling the strings a little bit. Riddler seems completely oblivious.
He seems clueless to what happened. Yeah,
the art keeps getting stronger every issue.
Oh, definitely.
Again,
yeah.
Some of the designs here, some of the design work here. I think of the three, I think 614 is my standout. Batman versus the Joker, obviously just a complete pummeling and ass beating for the Joker.
Definitely, yeah.
Didn't really talk about the design of the Joker, but it's really great. He's got that really like lean, skinny, kind of emaciated look, kind of eyes bulging a little bit. There's not a design of a character or design of anything this series that I ever thought didn't work for me.
Exactly.
Like, again, when I go back to Batman, and this is the Batman comic that I most associate as like my most... you know, kind of iconic version of Batman, my most like idealized version of Batman. But again, three solid issues. We're kind of again going through the mystery here. We're no closer to really solving it. When we read this back in the day, we had no real idea.
We were clueless when we hit this point too.
And things are going to get crazy in the next three issues. Things are really going to ramp up in the next three issues as we go forward into our last part here. Again, we're not really reviewing these as we kind of go, but each strong issue will kind of save our overall review score for the whole story into part four. Any other final thoughts you have, Ton, before we wrap this one up?
I wanted to ask you, I think we've done this on the other two parts. Favorite cover of these three?
Yes, of the three, I do like 615, you know, the Batman Nightwing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just striking imagery, kind of iconic. If I think about the story, 614 always stuck out to me. Yeah. Just that Batman's hands wrapped around the Joker's throat. Like, that's all you're really getting, that close up of the Joker's face and like Batman's hands around his throat.
Yeah.
I don't think it's hard to beat that one. I do like 615. If they were in order at 614, it's actually the order they come out, but top 14, to bottom 15, of 14. 16. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, 14 would get in my top spot too. That's just a mind-blowing cover. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think we have some other strong covers coming up in the last three issues. But yeah, things really kind of get crazy here as we go forward in these last. There's still a lot to come in the last three issues that you don't really, like, there's a lot thrown at you over the next three. I think 617 really starts to like crank it up a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of been pretty level out through this, but 617 really kind of ramps things up here and turns it up a notch. So can't wait to get into that. Hopefully we'll get into that in a couple weeks now and can kind of get this thing wrapped up. Anything else, Todd?
I think I'm good.
All right. So again, next week we'll do Hush Part 4. We'll kind of go through the story as we've been doing as before. We'll give you our final review score, kind of talk about anything that we kind of come up from there. But Todd, for now, tell everyone they can find us and stay up to date with us on social media.
We are at Tau Capes on YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. Tau Capes Podcast on Facebook. You can also email us at taucapespod@gmail.com.
If you enjoy the show, please consider leaving a like on this video and subscribing to our channel. Tau Capes will return. We want to thank you so much for watching. Till next time. Bye, guys.
See you guys.